right. Now all that's left.
This is the Quality News Network. In Grand Rapids, Michigan today, tens of thousands of mourners visited the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Museum to pay their respects to the late president.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 114, Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch, and we appreciate their support, too. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, February 7th, 2008. So if you are listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Thursday, that is February the 7th, 2008, that's 9 p.m. Eastern, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and participate with myself and to our two guests, count them one, two, who I'll be introducing shortly. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests, as well as to the guests' websites and the audio from previous shows in case you come across a guest that you would like to hear that you may have missed, those of you who stream via iPod or the archive streams. You'll find it all arranged in a calendar format. It's easy to locate. You'll also find links there to the chat room. That's the Head On Radio Network chat room, which is active as I speak. You'll find links there to the Head On Radio Network main site where you can participate in helping listener-supported progressive radio continue, keeps the stream streaming and the cassettes turning and the CD spinning and the packets passing. You'll find a PayPal button there. You'll find out about the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. We have a widely varied schedule, all of them progressive and all of them very proud to be a part of the Head On Radio Network, I'm only a very small part of. We have hosts as far away as Australia and in D.C. and South Florida. I'm in North Florida. We have hosts just spread out all over the place. It's amazing how we managed to pull this off. But all the right people came together at all the right time. It's a magical experience, the thing that the Head On Radio Network is made of. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links there to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. To contact the show, you can use 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Those are toll-free lines. If you have unlimited long distance, you should use that to help save the studio a nickel or a buck. We are listener-supported. So if you do have unlimited long distance, please use that. Use area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. And we're glad to pay the freight if you'd like to call toll-free, but we welcome your calls on either line. Mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks. And I'm so glad, got to tell you, delighted that Bob is back. What a wonderful trip he had, the stories that he told. Amazing. Thank you, Bob. I'm so glad you're back. The last couple of nights, with the exception of Wednesday, with your show gone, people were hearing the replay streams, but in my headphones, of course, I hear total silence. And I'm accustomed to hearing your show, and I'm accustomed to hearing your theme song, and it goes away, and then my theme music comes up. It's sort of a continuum, but the last few nights, out of this complete silence in my headset, all of a sudden, bam, the theme music, it always startles me. That's nice to have you back, Bob. Also, it's nice to have Lottie back. Our dear friend Lottie from the chat room was MIA for a few days, and he had a run-in where he had to be transported to the hospital very quickly, and he's back home in good shape and with good reports. We wanted Lottie to feel better, so we sent him poppies from the Wizard of Oz. Poppies will make him sleep. We indeed did send him some poppies, and Lottie, welcome back. We are so glad to have you back in the chat room. Let's see. Speaking of the weather, which we weren't, my stars, it is warm in Florida. We have mosquitoes flying around unheard of in February. 81 degree temperatures during the day, unheard of in February. For those of you who doubt global warming or climate change, as it's better put, I don't think there's very many people who doubt that who listen to this network. But for those who do, visit North Florida. You'll find it extremely out of order, as is many parts of the globe. But I see it every day. I never saw a mosquito in February, though. I lived here all my life, and it's pretty amazing. Our guest this evening, which we'll be bringing on soon, we're actually first heard about them together. I believe we had the Archbishop Bruce Simpson on the show. In fact, the Archbishop has been on this program twice, and amazing person in depth. You'll find his interviews located at the Strictly Confidential Radio calendars. Just click on the calendars within the website. Amazing audio, amazing man. And the bishop was telling us about a couple of singers who at least started and are widely known for contemporary Christian recording. They're branching out into other areas, of course, but they're still consider themselves as a spiritual format, and they'll be telling us more about that as time goes on in the show. Began asking around about them and found that they had, in fact, performed in many metropolitan community churches around the country. There's an MCC in Tallahassee. I brought their name up, and in fact, they did perform at MCC Tallahassee also, and they have grown tremendously. They now have a tour that is worldwide. Several CDs out, DVDs. We'll be finding out about those things. In fact, they are. Even played in their remixes are played in clubs. Amazing couple, really. And looking forward to talking to them in just a second. The studio is getting them on the line now, and they will let me know just as soon as they have a connection to Jason and DeMarco, wherever they happen to be. They travel so much it's hard to know where they're going to turn up at any given time. I'll tell you a little bit about them while the studio is connecting. Jason is from an entertainment family. In fact, he grew up in Maryland and traveled with his mother in the music ministry, as a matter of fact. He also toured with a professional contemporary Christian group, Truth, and another group called The Sound. Jason graduated from Lee University of Cleveland with a BA in music and sociology, also runs RJN Music, which was originally based in Nashville. The interesting thing about Jason is he's from a Pentecostal background, and although the foundations, as he states here, the foundations of my morals and spirituality and ideals are a result of my strict Pentecostal upbringing, my spiritual beliefs have broadened along with my many musical styles and talents. He believes in breaking down barriers and crossing borders and reaching people from all walks of life, and that music is the universal language of the soul, and he has the ability to bring people together. Jason, we completely agree here. Now, DeMarco, by contrast, remembers learning to sing nursery rhymes by the Catholic nuns. Indeed, DeMarco grew up in the Roman Catholic Church, and Jason grew up in the Pentecostal Church. What a wonderful meeting of minds. We'll want to find out about that as we talk to them. He also has a BA degree in music and languages from York University in Canada, and has traveled extensively in theater, and has joined up with Jason and DeMarco. And not only are they a singing group, they are also partners. And the tradition of this program bringing on people who break the stereotypes. We, if you recall, we had Beckstead and Brenner here on the show a while back. It's a lesbian couple who travels in gospel singing. And it's about time we had a couple of guys. Jason DeMarco, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Hello.
Do we have the? Do we have both?
DeMarco's here. Can you hear me?
Excellent, excellent. So I can identify your. So I can identify your voices. This is Jason. Okay, perfect. And who is DeMarco? What does he sound like?
This is DeMarco. Not much different.
There's enough that I think we could. We'll at least try to keep it straight, guys. I am delighted to have you on the show. I really am. As I was saying during the introduction, the Archbishop told us about you, and I asked about you at Metropolitan Community Church in Tallahassee, and they indeed said that you had sung there, and what a wonderful performance you gave. Everyone there I mentioned you, all remembered you very fondly. That must have been several years ago. I understand now you guys are traveling worldwide and are heavily booked. What's going on with you guys?
Well,
Jason, you can start.
Yeah, this is Jason, and I'll be more of the talker, so you'll know which one is me.
Okay.
We attribute it to the whole Pentecostal Catholic thing. The Catholic boy is the quiet one. He wasn't allowed to say much in church without getting in trouble.
Exactly.
But, no, we've had a really exciting few years together. You know, DeMarco and I, when we met, we had no idea that we would be, working together as well as in a relationship, and the doors kind of flung open for us to make this a duo career and a duo ministry. And the last few years have just been an amazing ride that we've been on, and we kind of just go where the doors open. We don't really fit in many of the boxes that I think people have tried to put us in. People ask, well, are you Christian singers? Are you, pop singers? Are you gay singers? Are you, there's all these labels that people have tried to impose on us. And I think what we've had to really just come to the realization is that we don't really fit in any of those boxes. And so we've kind of been treading new territory. And it's been a wonderful experience. You know, we've blessed the be able to do what we love and to be able to share in that experience together with the one that we love. It's a really big blessing for us.
It's a remarkable story. It brings to mind that you do face a particular challenge that I think would think most singing groups do not. I believe that by and large the LGBT community has been turned off so badly by the Christian far right and some of the insults and things they hurl at us, that it's probably hard for them to accept you as Christian singers. And by the same token, the heterosexuals don't really understand how to fit you in as gay folks. How has it been walking that thin line?
DeMarco,
answer.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because when we perform at the universities, when the GSAs bring us in, or the gay and straight groups, we remind them, because we learned the hard way. We said, when you're going to put up our posters, don't either say gay or either say Christian, and if you put both, nobody's going to come. That's often what we have. So yes, you're right. We walk a very fine line, and it's really our message is very inclusive. Yes, when we perform in church, then we're going to pull out those good old hymns that we do in a contemporary way. But at the same time, we feel right at home singing at a gay and pride festival, or even like a straight church or a straight music festival. So it's just about speaking into the audience of the people that's there. It's about speaking their language and trying not to offend anyone, and just continuing to walk the walk through our music that we do in our life. And that is, just to love people no matter who they are. And we try to bring that through in our music and our lyrics.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm struck by your comments about playing what you're calling spiritual music. I think that is wonderful. In fact, these days I'm in close contact with a DJ who's been a DJ for many, many years, and he firmly believes, as you do, that you can bring people to a spiritual, you can lead them by using, shall we say, contemporary-type songs, even remixed dance beat-type songs that don't necessarily come across as Christian but are spiritual and uplifting. Is this the first album that you guys have had that have been remixed and played in clubs?
Well, I think what we had to really start looking at is, when you look at the gay community, the fact is, you know, we want to reach out to all people, but we have a heart for the gay community, because we are, you know, ourselves have been on this journey of reconciliation, and we know so many people that do feel that, you know, the church has just basically said, you aren't allowed here, or you can't be a part, God doesn't love you. And so it's been a really wonderful opportunity for us to, you know, release our pop music and even our inspirational music, and then have some really great remixers come in and do some dance remixes of these songs and get them out to the clubs. Because, you know, we kind of always kind of laugh, because we feel like the club at many times can be a spiritual experience. There's a group of people coming together that are gathered in one space, you know, that are really resonating with this energy and this feeling that they all have, because in some strange way, when we're all out at a club, you know, we feel this connectedness with other people that somehow we know have been through this journey that we've been on. And the music, it just takes us to that other space. And for me, you know, in church, that's always what took me, that's what connected me spiritually, was always the music or the praise and worship. And so, ironically enough, in a club, the music tends to do that with people. It takes them to another place. And for us to have our music in that format that can really speak to people, and that the message can still reach them, it's a really neat experience. And it's really brought a lot of people to us that I don't think otherwise would have taken the opportunity. You know, they would have already had preconceived notions of what we were about or what our music was about. And by us doing these dance remixes, it's really opened the door for them not to only enjoy and, you know, really like our dance remixes, but they've also gone and then gotten our other materials, you know, which has then connected them to a whole other, you know, background. It's an amazing feeling when this 16-year-old comes up to us in a club after performing, and, you know, they pull out our Songs for the Spirit CD, which is all traditional hymns, and they say, you know, I grew up singing these, and to hear a gay couple singing these old hymns in a new voice, you know, they say, you have no idea what that means to me. And they, you know, we've had a few people even laugh and say they sing the third part, because obviously DeMarco and I are doing harmony, and they said they love playing that CD because they can throw the third part in there and sing along. So it's odd. It's, you know, we found you just never know how people are going to be affected and inspired, and what avenue, you know, it takes to get there and reach into people's hearts.
Well, Jason, I find that story remarkable, and I can certainly understand you're feeling the connectedness of the music and the movement of the Spirit. Having spent a year myself going exclusively to evangelical churches, very large ones, with the live music and the singing and young people all rushing to the front to dance and raise their hands and praise the Lord, you know, prior to the youth part of the service. In fact, the music and spirituality is deeply connected. Now, never having been to a Catholic church, I understand that that's more a calmer, not that it isn't spiritual, but calmer. Jason, did you have a hard time convincing DeMarco to come along with you on this journey? Not the personal one, but the singing one.
Well, DeMarco, why don't you tell the story of, you know, when you met me, because he had no idea what the Christian music industry was. So it was pretty...
Yeah, I mean, growing up Catholic, contemporary music was just starting to come, you know, they just allowed drums, and, they stuffed the bass kick drum with all these blankets anyway, so it was kind of funny where they were compared to, I guess, the more charismatic Christian churches in their music. And, you know, we had a few songs, but the rest were all hymns out of the hymnal, and basically it was always, we stood up together and we sang those hymns and then sat down, and that was it. There was nothing really spontaneous about it. And when I met Jason and heard about the Christian music industry, I said to myself, what the heck is that? I mean, Christian music industry, it sounded like business, but then it sounded like church and music, and I didn't get it. And because I asked myself, well, is there a Catholic music industry? And if there is, why haven't I heard about it? And, I mean, I imagine these Franciscan monks traveling on a bus from cathedral to cathedral selling their tapes. I mean, I didn't know what it was. So can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly, yeah.
No, so sure enough, Jason invited me to come to one of his concerts that he gave. We started dating before we started singing together, and I just saw the most beautiful music and concert, but it was spiritual, and people were connecting spiritually at the same time with these great songs that to me sounded like, you know, the kind of music I liked, pop music, but with some sort of a message. I mean, it was very contemporary, and I thought, wow, I could really like to enjoy singing this. And then another thing, I mean, growing up in theater and singing in clubs, you know, when I moved to Los Angeles, it's very much about you, and there's a little bit of a critical and self-conscious energy around getting up and performing in a club and then getting off the stage. But all of a sudden, when you're singing in, you know, contemporary Christian music in a concert, it's not about you anymore. It's about you being a vessel for music and healing that's working through you, through your voice and through the words you sing into the hearts of the people in attendance. And for me, I for the first time, I got to get out of the way of myself, and that's where I think I started to grow. And as Jason invited me to sing a couple songs here and there, I fell in love with it. I connected with it. People were moved. Our voices together, people said our talents were magnified exponentially, and I just, well, you know, we started with a Christmas tour in 2002, and we kind of never stopped.
Well, DeMarco, that is a wonderful story, and I have to share with you that my primary background for most of my life, except for that year I mentioned among the evangelicals, was in a Methodist church, which is it sounds very similar to what you described. We got up and sang, and then we sat down, and it was all very controlled and very calm,
very,
and nobody made...
Very liturgical, we will kind of describe that as.
Yeah, we kept to the rules. My first exposure to the evangelicals was, I was just blown away by the energy and the power and the music and the way it mixed together with spirituality, and I'm so glad that you guys are doing this. I need to tell you that we do have a caller who would like to talk to us all, and to you two especially, and that is Archbishop Bruce Simpson. Archbishop, welcome to Strictly Confidential again. I'm so glad to hear from you.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing great this evening.
It's good.
Hello,
on with
there.
J&D, how are you guys?
We're wonderful. It's good to hear your voice. It's been a while.
Likewise, I just want to say on radio, where there are tens of millions of people listening, that I love you guys. I'm very fond of you. I miss seeing you as often as I used to. And I had a question for you. If you'll remember, a ways back, you were going to play in Singapore, and you guys called me worried about certain security issues and things like that, and we talked about it, and then the problem went away because the government banned you from entering Singapore. My spies tell me that you just played there, so I'm wondering what happened.
Well, it was an amazing experience. DeMarco, do you want to kind of go into it? Do you want to share a little bit more about, because I know, you know, DeMarco tends to,
sure,
he has a little more of the specifics when it comes to names of the people.
Absolutely.
Well, first of all, Bruce, I'm sorry. I can hear your voice, but I can't really make out anything you're saying. But hello, and we'll catch up later. But in order just to kind of keep this going and answer the question about Singapore, over 2 years ago, we were banned by the Singapore government because of, they said, our alternative lifestyle. What happened was the group that brought us in, the promoters of this, it was to be a World AIDS Day fundraiser concert, they started promoting the event, and they were using, you know, billboards and with pictures of us with our arms around each other, and citizens of Singapore started filing complaints. And basically the government decided that, you know, they researched who we are and found that, you know, it was too controversial. Now, they didn't endorse. They thought we were coming in with some, you know, agenda that was more than just the AIDS education that was going to benefit from our concert. So, unfortunately, the media authority that is the branch of the government that gives out licenses for these big events, they basically denied the license for the promoters to put this concert on at the Raffles Hotel, which is a beautiful hotel and venue in Singapore. That's where they invented the Singapore Sling. I don't know if you've ever heard of that cocktail.
Yes.
I've had way too many in my high school days. But so we, out of nowhere, about 5 or 6 months ago, the promoters contacted us again and said, listen, since 2 years ago, since what happened, it's really brought this forward in the media, and it's gotten the conversation going, and we feel that the time is right for us to take the next step and try bringing you back, and we're going to promote it a little bit differently, but we'd like you to consider coming back. So, as hesitant as we are and as freaked out as our parents were about going there, thinking that we'd have no rights and they could jail us or cane us for us doing or saying something that they would think is inappropriate or wrong. But Jason and I, you know, we've really learned to listen to our gut or our spirit, and we felt like we were supposed to go and do this and that we would be safe. And so we did. And the promoters, this is the first time they were going to put on a concert or event of this size, and they, you know, didn't even know if people would buy tickets. Of course, people wait to the last minute, and but they ended up having 900 people come, and it was straight people in the community, it was the gays and lesbians, and apparently this is the largest gathering of an event like this that has ever happened in the history of Singapore. And not only were the numbers there, but let me see if I can get this title right. The senior minister of foreign affairs for Singapore, whose name was Mr. Balaji, he came to the concert to accept an award and also introduce Jason and I to the stage. And this is the same man that denied the license 2 years ago. So talk about coming full circle, and talk about an amazing outcome and an amazing giant leap forward for that city, state, country.
I really want to congratulate you guys on breaking through that barrier, because you know, as I said, I remember when that was all going down and they were pretty adamant that you weren't going to come and do anything, and then, like I said, I heard you guys went, and I was just shocked because the government of Singapore is not known for changing its mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I assure you, if they had tried to cane either one of you guys, I would have raised holy hell to stop it.
Well, that's the only thing that gave us assurance in going was knowing that we would, that there were people here, that if something were to have happened, that we would have people here that were truly fighting on our behalf, because it really was, I mean, we were entering into a country where we had absolutely no rights, could have done anything, and so it was a big leap of faith, but it was such a beautiful experience, and I feel so grateful that we were able to go do this. And I tell you, I think the biggest thing is that the same man, the minister there, he, over the last year, he has been going with the organizers of this organization called Safe Haven that brought us in, and they've been going to Australia, because Australia is one of the few countries where the statistics of of AIDS, of people contracting AIDS, is going down. And so he's been visiting there, and there's been an open dialogue, and he's been meeting real gay and lesbian people and their families. And I really think that it's, first of all, it's educated him on the issue, and it's also made him aware of ways to prevent this from happening, which is many times just simply educating people in society in ways to help prevent this disease. And I think because of that, by them bringing us in, it really created an opportunity to spread this awareness, to spread this education, and to open new dialogue that this country has been very unsettled in opening. And so the people there were so amazingly appreciative and grateful for this event happening and for us to be a part. It was a very humbling experience.
Well, in 5 years, you guys have gone from really a small-time act that played the MCC circuit to international stars and affecting government policy and other such things. And you are commendable for the work you do. And I am proud to have you as representatives of the gay community. If you get a chance, you should mention your work with Trevor Project, with Peter. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to tie up any more Peter's show, but I miss you guys. Haven't seen you for a bit, but I treasure the pictures from Los Angeles when I was out in Hollywood, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk again soon.
Yes, definitely. Well, and for the listening audience, you know, I want to publicly thank you because it was because of the interview that you did with us in The Advocate originally that really launched our story and really got it out there in front of a larger population. And so, you know, we're eternally grateful for you for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've been a large part of this happening, so we appreciate that.
I'm just a sucker for two pretty faces. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Pure and simple. Well, again, I love you guys and wish you continued success. And I do hope to see you soon. And, Peter, thank you for giving me a few minutes of your show to talk to two people that I really care about and follow their careers with intense interest and prayer.
Archbishop, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate your call, and thank you for joining. You're delightful.
God bless, Peter.
God bless. And that was Archbishop Bruce Simpson. And Jason DeMarco, I'd like to say to you both also that I'm very proud to have you represent the gay community and the LGBT community at large. It's wonderful to see what you're doing. And it's also very clear that the Holy Spirit has a hand in your work to be able to move this quickly and to be changing hearts and minds. You just don't do that without the help of the Spirit. I'm very proud of you. I want to also tell you that we are posting your internet link in the chat room, but for those of us, those of you listeners who are not in the chat room, you can find information about them at Jason and that's the full word spelled and DeMarco, DEMARCO.com. That's Jason and DeMarco.com. You guys, Jason DeMarco were kind enough to send us some music tracks, and as we do with all of our music guests, we're going to run some of their music here in just a minute. Just before we do, Jason DeMarco, I want to ask you, our listeners are always curious about the guests in terms of their personal lives and how they met and that sort of thing. I'm getting conflicting information in my reading. One story says you met in 2001 in Los Angeles. The other story says you met in 2001 in Vermont. What's the real story?
No, that's funny, actually. Vermont is a restaurant in Los Angeles.
Oh, so, that's why I didn't get it. Okay, that seemed to be a conflict. How'd that work?
There's a street in L.A., and it's Vermont is the name of the street, and there's a restaurant on that street called Vermont Restaurant, and that's where we actually met.
That was a cute and honest mistake.
And how long had you been in L.A., Jason, before you met DeMarco?
It was very short. I moved to Los Angeles March 1st of 2001, and I met him in June of 2001. So I'd only been there about 3 months.
The Spirit moves fast. I have another question. This is something that couples all over face, both straight and gay, especially if they're both people from a background in the church and who take things to heart. How does a Pentecostal Roman Catholic marriage work? Were there issues regarding faith and different belief systems and traditions? How'd you guys work that out? That seems to be a common thing in couples.
Well, first of all, being a gay spiritual person, you have a lot of letting go of literalism of Bible scriptures. First, and you know, also being Catholic, I wasn't the most devout Catholic, and I didn't cling to those scriptures like I'm sure Jason's upbringing had. But definitely reconciling being a GLBT person and Christianity or spirituality, there was a lot of work to be done, and basically we've learned that, you know, we can't take them as literally as we were taught. And so we've had, I guess, a more educated approach on being able to, in our relationship, really celebrate those differences that we have from our different religious backgrounds rather than let them be obstacles in our relationship and say, well, in the Bible, I can't do this because the Bible says this. I mean, we've never used scriptures against each other. The Christian right is doing a great job at that. We don't need to do it in our relationship. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Are we using?
Go ahead. Please go ahead.
I was just going to say, growing up, you know, my mom always said, I hope you marry an Italian girl and an Italian Catholic girl, because there's already enough problems in a marriage that, you know, you want to try and eliminate all those things that are different. But I don't really believe in that. I believe that anything can work when there's love and there's communication and there's all those other things that that are necessary for a relationship to work, and not those tiny differences like dogma from your religious upbringing.
So instead, he married a German Pentecostal boy. Boy, your mom, she really different than she expected.
that's a wonderful story. Thank you for telling us about that. You guys, tell us about your CD. I'm holding in my hand a copy of Till the End of Time. This is the third, or is it the fourth CD?
This is, it's our third CD, and then we've had we had Christmas, Songs for the Spirit, Spirit Pop, Till the End of Time. So, yes, that's our fourth album together.
Well, tell us how this particular CD differs from the earlier ones. I'm told it has a different style. Now, I have purposely not listened to the tracks because I wanted to listen to them the same time our listeners listen to them. We're going to ask you to help us introduce some of these tracks as we go on in a minute. But tell us about the difference in this CD. Apparently, it's a new, it's a different style, is it?
Well, you know, I think, and this kind of is connecting with your last question. You know, I think probably the biggest differentiation with our background, for me, I was very fortunate in that DeMarco, he wasn't a, you know, his family went to church probably holidays, and, you know, they weren't like really strict Catholics. And so when I entered into the relationship with him, he had very little baggage, as I like to call it. So it was much easier for us to move forward in a relationship, because, you know, I had plenty of baggage to keep us both busy coming from the Pentecostal church. And so when we met, the one thing that I really am grateful for with my church background is the music. And I had already, when we met, been traveling in a solo music ministry, sharing my story. When I was traveling with a Christian band, and when I came out to the band, I was invited to get out of a band, as I would like to say. And it really was an awakening for me that, you know, this was happening to a lot of people. You know, when people were trying to be authentic and coming out about their sexuality, many times the church and just Christianity in general basically said, well, you don't belong here. And so I kind of created a new path, and I guess I should say God kind of set me on a new path of going to churches that were gay-friendly, or that were trying to become gay-friendly, you know, that were very open to reconciliation. And I started sharing my story and would hold concerts. So by the time DeMarco and I met, I had been doing that for 3 years. By the time we met, we went into this not really planning on... I had moved to Los Angeles to go pursue a pop career, and DeMarco had moved to L.A. to pursue a pop career. And so we started our career off with all intentions, really, of becoming a pop duo. However, because I had such a wonderful following and foundation in the gay and lesbian affirming churches around the country, they kind of welcomed us with open arms, and we began, you know, as I would travel, DeMarco started going with me, and it somewhat formed this ministry without us even meaning to form it. And after doing that for about 2 years, we both had to really stop and look at our long-term future and realize that we were kind of hitting a brick wall. Unfortunately, the Christian music industry wouldn't touch us. You know, we tried... we were shopped to a few Christian labels. We had a single that went to Christian radio, and as soon as they found out we were a gay couple, you know, we just hit a brick wall because no one wanted to work with us once they found that out. And so that really led us at looking at a question of, well, if we can't go into the Christian music industry, what are we going to do? Are we going to just continue traveling to gay-friendly churches, or are we going to try expanding
and really taking our message to a broader audience, which that option would be going to mainstream pop and mainstream radio. And so Till the End of Time, the album that you had, was our first mainstream release where we said, let's record an album and, you know, write most of the material and work with, collaborate with a few songwriters and release an album that is truly a mainstream album, you know, that we can shop out there to mainstream labels and that we can actually, you know, shop to mainstream radio stations as well to try to get our music out there to a broader audience. And thus far, it's been a really, it was an amazing experience. The first track that we released was actually a remix of Trying to Get to You, and that ended up hitting Billboard charts. And then we released the single This Is Love, and that single we recorded a music video to, and that ended up being voted the number one best video of 2006 on MTV's Logo, which is the gay and lesbian network that MTV launched called Logo Television. And so the album has been a really beautiful bridge, introducing us to a lot of people that have never otherwise have never heard of us, and has really introduced us outside of our Christian genre to just mainstream music lovers.
That's a wonderful story. And I'm told, too, that, that the majority of the tracks on this CD were actually written by you both, so there must be a lot of you personally in many of these songs.
Yes, that's true. We say it was kind of an honest story with the beginning and the end of two people looking for the right person, coming together, meeting, forming a relationship, going through some rocky roads, and then breaking up and then coming back together. And basically, that was our real life story. And we did, you know, write most of the lyrics. And those songs just came from our heart. And we call it romantic rock pop. And the great thing about it is that because love is such a central focus of the lyrics, they work great in any setting because, you know, what could the church possibly say wrong with singing songs about love?
Well said. Well said. I would love for the listeners to hear some of these. Would it be all right to run either, which one should we do first? Should we run the Trying to Get to You or should we choose another track to expose the listeners to first time around?
No. That's a good one. That sounds good on radio.
Okay. We're going to then listen to track one from their CD, Till the End of Time. Jason and DeMarco, Bob, again, that is track one. Roll it.
is the light? Where is my face? When will I see your face? I feel you all around me. Touch me, hold me, whisper in my ear. You're beyond.
Absolutely. Wow, that is a fabulous track. It's really very, very touching track also, and it can be taken on so many different levels. I see where you're going with this.
Thank you.
it's wonderful music. And I'm actually glad that I did wait until to hear that with the listeners. It really was an amazing and absolutely stunningly beautiful, well-produced. And I'm beginning to see what they mean now about your voices. They're both just truly exceptional. In looking through some of the information, I understand that DeMarco goes all the way back to stunning people with his version of Ave Maria. So that's a wonderful beginning to be where you both are now. I'm very impressed.
It's interesting to find somebody. I mean, for singers in general, it's hard to find people that you can blend with and that you can really, that vocally you sound good together. So for two guys to find each other where they're both lyrical singers and for our voices to be able to complement each other, and then for all the other elements to fit and to work, we definitely know there's a bigger picture to all of this and a bigger purpose. And I think we've just really kind of fallen into that, and it's just been such a beautiful experience to just go with the flow and watch it unfold.
Well, I have to agree with you. Point of curiosity: many progressive Christian writers, people like Brennan, even the Archbishop who just spoke with us, who is a prolific writer. Many of them. Are often attacked by the right-wing Christian so-called blogs and news sites like American Family Association, etc. Are you guys so far flying under the radar, or are they after you too?
You know, we've been so, I guess the word is fortunate, that we never claim to have the answer with a capital T. You know, what we have our truth, that we have reconciled this and that we feel very much at peace with God and who we are. And, you know, we feel that God has led us into reaching out to this particular community in the gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender community. But because I think love has always been our number one weapon. We have never tried to make others wrong. We don't ask people to agree with us. We simply ask people to love us. You know, we truly go by the teachings of Jesus, and the greatest commandment was that to love your neighbor as yourself. And so that's really all we ask of people is we say, you know, we can agree to disagree, but let's still love each other. Let's still respect each other. You're my brother. You're my sister. Pray for me. You know, if you really believe that this is something that if you're worried about my soul, then pray for me and pray that God will deal with my heart, and all I ask from you is to love me. And so because we've made that our mission, because we've made that our stance, and yet done that in a way that we are not at all ashamed of what we believe and what we have come to believe, I think we've really avoided a lot of, we really don't get hate mail, we do not get
people coming against us, we get a lot of questions of people saying, well, how can you really believe this, or how can you justify this? And in response, you know, I share our beliefs. And it's really, once again, it comes down to just, you don't have to agree with these, but let's love each other. And so, you know, we've been involved with a few events. You know, we have sung outside of Focus on the Family with Soul Force, you know, at an event. But once again, those are all peaceful events where no one is there to slander anyone. We're there to simply open dialogue and to try to create a space of understanding and compassion.
And we should also mention that James Dobson, on account of our holding a peaceful action on his campus, he gave everybody the day off because he didn't want the sweet old ladies that run the phones to come and meet us and see that we're not freaks and that we're just normal, nice people. He's smart.
Yeah. So, well, I have to tell you both that... Go ahead.
Apparently,
please.
They lost millions and millions of dollars because of the, you know, the phone lines not being able to be open, and you know, all the income that's derived from. Pardon?
And I will tell you, I said because the office is being closed that, you know, they lost a lot of money. But I will tell you, Fred Phelps, you know, when his group came out to they picketed one of our concerts. We had probably the best attendance we've ever had at a concert, and so we wish he'd come to all of them.
Well said, guys. And I have to tell you, I'm personally convicted by that. You are the second person to tell me that within the last 24 hours. More love and less fighting. It's a message that I hear when I have guests on from places like Soul Force and some of the other organizations. That they're very and I fall into a pattern in doing this show of giving verbal tongue lashings to many of the people who, like the James Dobsons, et cetera. And from time to time, it's very good for me to hear this perspective because, you know, too much of this sort of news does kind of make a fellow turn mean, so it's wonderful to actually hear this from you. It's appreciated.
Well, it's easy to... You know, let's face it. I mean, we're human and we have opinions. And it's easy for all of us to think that we're right and that everyone should believe the way we believe and that everyone should, when you get to politics, and especially with talk radio, I mean, my Lord, that's talk radio. That's one of the reasons talk radio is out there, to get people stirred up and, you know, create conversation. But I think we're, you know, in our spirituality, and I tell you, this was something we experienced in Thailand that was really amazing for us coming from the States, was in Thailand, even the taxi cab drivers, you know, they'd be cut off where this person just literally just cut them off in the middle of the road, and the taxi cab drivers, they sat there very peaceful, you know, it was so little aggression. The people there are... You know, obviously a lot of them are Buddhist, but it was such an interesting way of life for us to see not having that aggressiveness or not having the anger that so many of us here tend to have. And I understand that I understand where that anger stems from, and, you know, a lot of people may feel like they have the right to be angry, you know, when people have gone through certain things and life has been hard, and, you know, we can all create a story and keep going by that story. But when it really comes down to it, for us in our spiritual path, we look at the teachings of Christ, you know, and I think this is another interesting fact, and I was at a Bible study tonight right before this call, where, you know, the question came up of, did Jesus ask to be worshipped, or did Jesus ask to be followed? And, you know, if you really read through Scripture, I think it speaks more of Jesus saying, follow me, you know, follow me. And I think that's where, in our own path, we have truly tried taking the teachings of Christ, taking the example of Christ, and saying, you know, let's just live by that, and let's walk in compassion, let's walk in grace, let's walk in respecting people that are different, you know, the oppressed, the sick, and let's really take those teachings and apply them to our life. And I think that's really our path, you know, and we don't make people wrong if that's not what they believe, but I do believe that when you take that path, you truly do live life more abundantly and more at peace rather than, you know,
complete the stuff about James Dobson. First of all, I think he and his crew have done an amazing work around this world with their broadcast, and really, I'm sure he's brought the message of Jesus in a lot of his ministries. However, this particular ministry where he attacks the gay community has caused devastation that people don't even understand that our youth in our community struggling with reconciling their sexuality and their Christianity have taken their lives. And I believe that the blood is on the hands of people like James Dobson, who pumped these millions of dollars into campaigns to tell them that it's a choice and that they're wrong, and they have to come to Jesus and either be celibate or become heterosexual, which is completely against how they are wired. So I really have a problem with it. I can't respect someone who believes something that causes other people to take their own lives. I mean, you can have a political debate, whether it's Obama or Hillary, but when it comes to, you know, no one's going to commit suicide over, or maybe people will, but hopefully over one president, one candidate winning presidency over the other. But it's just so serious, the impact that James Dobson has through all the, you know, the avenues that he can reach people. And personally, I don't think he writes about us or talks about us, although I'm sure they know who we are, is because, like I said, they're smart and they know that we're going to sell tons of CDs, and they don't want that because that's what's going to make us stronger.
Well, Jason DeMarco, I have to tell you both, you have been just wonderful guests. In fact, I haven't been as inspired or impressed by anyone in quite some time. You are both remarkable people. I'm so proud to have you representing us, and your faith and your simple faith and your love is just stunning. And
we appreciate the opportunity. It's always a wonderful opportunity to to share and to just spread our message through our music and through hopefully our lives.
Well, you've certainly touched me this evening, and as I've kept you almost an hour, and I don't want to keep you any longer. But we want to go to break with one of your songs. Which ones should we use?
I would do "This Is Love."
Yeah, Valentine's Day is just around the corner. Let's get them in the spirit.
Yeah, I can't think of two people more qualified to get them in the spirit for a holiday that celebrates love. You guys, you're just remarkable, and you're certainly welcome back on this program anytime. Feel free to contact us. And consider us at your service, and God bless you both.
Thank you so much. And one thing I do want to mention is, for those that, I know this is a short hour that we have together, but we do have a documentary film that is being released this summer, and our producer is in negotiations with a major network. So I would just encourage people to keep up with our website, and, and not only will it be on a network, but it'll also come out on DVD, and it basically travels, the producer traveled with us the last 2 years, and it really tells our story. It has our parents involved, they're interviewing them, and really shows the role that we've been playing in this movement, as well as some of the struggles that we've had. And then it also deals with our music and the process that we've gone through in our career and the transition that our music has had. So it's called We're All Angels, and it's going to be released this summer again, and it's really a great way for people to get to know us without necessarily, having another hour of us on the radio.
Well, you're certainly welcome to come back for another hour on the radio. I imagine in a year you've expanded so quickly, it's hard to know if you might be president in a year, who knows. But in fact, it would probably be a good thing if you were in the White House. And thank you again so much, both of you. And again, folks, that's Jason and DeMarco at .com. That's JasonAndDemarco.com. And good night, guys. And thank you so much for taking some time with us.
Thank you.
God bless.
Good night. And so, Bob, we've been running an hour. Let's go ahead and go to break. What we'll do is go to break with their track "This Is Love." That's track 3, and we'll follow that with our standard break. And this is Strictly Confidential. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. Now I lay me down to sleep.
I pray thee, Lord, my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake.
Across Appalachia, children pray at night. Coal companies are destroying Appalachia with 3 million pounds of high explosives per day. Take a stand. Go to CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Be part of the solution so you and they can sleep at night. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net.
The trains are rolling by and I can feel the ground rumbling.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court?
You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway Insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
And I'm back, riding across the nation on a horse named Strictly Confidential. This is indeed Peter Godbold, and this is indeed Strictly Confidential, conversation radio for the LGBT listener and the straight listener in mind. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4 head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. You can also reach us if you have unlimited long distance by using that and saving the listener-supported network a nickel or a buck. You can reach us at 304-658-3333 in West Virginia. This is Conversation Radio, so give me a call, and we'll talk about what's on your mind. The email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks, and I'm afraid I didn't check it during the last break, so we'll see what's flowing in, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Wow. Jason and DeMarco, you know, when I was in my 20s, I was a mess. I'm so impressed with some of the people on the show. You know, the kids coming up today, what a difference being able to be more open about who you are and how you feel has made it. Still, the long road is certainly not traveled. There are many miles to go. But what a difference even this amount of progress has made in the lives of young folks like Jason and DeMarco, two of the most remarkably, I have a little loss for words, two people who can present themselves in a lucid and engaging way and who have both a very sweet spirit. I almost hate to, how do you follow them? So in any case, I will tell you how we're going to follow them. We're going to do take calls, and we'll do some news stories here in the first half hour of the second hour of Strictly Confidential. Our DJ, who's playing in the gay bar across the street tonight, is none other than the fabulous VJC. That's Victor from disco935.net in New York. I love the way that guy says, hello. You gotta love a guy like that. By the way, Victor was on the show in the past. I'm sorry I don't have the calendar date in front of me, but remarkable interview, absolutely remarkable. And if you have a chance, stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and you'll see the calendar, the various months. You can click through and locate Victor's interview. It was, I think, November, December, somewhere in that time frame. And the world hasn't changed that much for some of us. In fact, in Cairo, there's a huge protest regarding the criminalization of HIV. You see, in Cairo, HIV is seen as a crime and not an illness. There have been a series of arrests in Cairo, and that series of arrests came because of one man's admission to the police that he was HIV positive. Folks in Cairo seem to believe that that makes you a danger to public health, and it is a, well, I'll tell you what they did. Human Rights Watch is trying to get this overturned, convicted four men for, and I quote, you can't make this stuff up, habitual practice of debauchery. Kid you not. I haven't heard the word debauchery. It's such a long time. It's a fabulous word, but it's not what you want to hear from law enforcement officers regarding who you are and your health status. It sounds like an old Betty Davis word, doesn't it? Debauchery. I really have to start using that word more often. It's a wonderful word, but I won't use it in this context. Four others are being held pending trial. The government is making arbitrary arrests based on HIV status, and the Human Rights Watch is taking steps, or at least trying to end prejudice and information, misinformation about HIV and AIDS. The director of the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Rights Program at Human Rights Watch says these arrests are shocking and embody both ignorance and injustice. I couldn't agree with you more. Egypt threatens not just its international reputation, but its own population if it responds to the HIV-AIDS epidemic with prison terms instead of prevention and care. The arrest began last October 2007, just mere minutes ago in our time frame. Police stopped two men who were having an argument on the street in central Cairo. Now, one of them, one of the two men who were having an argument, doesn't anything about physical argument here. It wasn't a fight. They were just, you know, couples sometimes argue. These two did it on the streets in Cairo. And one of them told the officer that he was HIV positive. Now, the police officers immediately took them both to the, now, I can't make this stuff up. In Cairo, it's called, and I quote, the morality police. Yes. Debauchery, morality police. This is what's happening on the planet. Things are not right here, but things are worse in other places. The police took them to the morality police and opened an investigation against them for homosexual conduct. The two men told human rights defenders and representatives that they were slapped and that they were beaten for refusing to sign statements the police wrote for them. They spent 4 days in the morality police office, handcuffed to an iron desk. They slept on the floor. Police later subjected both the men to forensic anal examinations designed to, and I quote, prove that they had engaged in homosexual conduct. Human Rights Watch has documented such examinations to detect evidence of homosexuality, as they say. And Human Rights Watch finds that these, quote, examinations actually constitute torture, as I'm sure you can well imagine. Police then arrested two more men because their photographs or telephone numbers were found on the first two, who happened to be having an altercation in the street. Authorities then subjected all four men to HIV tests without their consent. All four are still in detention, pending prosecution. They're going to make a decision, you see, on whether or not to bring charges of homosexual conduct. So you see, AIDS, having HIV or AIDS is homosexual conduct. There, one does not need to be in the boyfriend in the bed with one's boyfriend or girlfriend. In the case of our L's in the rainbow, but One has to merely be HIV positive. The first two arrestees were reportedly tested HIV positive, and they're both being held in a Cairo hospital, handcuffed to their beds and only unchained for 1 hour each day. Meanwhile, the police placed the apartment where one of the men had lived under surveillance, under continuous surveillance. Now, on November 20th, 2 days after a new tenant had assumed the lease, police were aware of this, that a new tenant had assumed the lease, the police raided the apartment and detained 4 other men. Police were quite aware that there was no relationship between the 2 men who took over the lease or any with the people that they were already holding in custody. Nonetheless, I suppose on the fear that these men would get HIV or turn gay from living in the same apartment as these other men, they were arrested. Now, according to the police report, when they burst into the apartment, who was being leased by new folks, the men were fully dressed. They were not engaging in any illegal acts at the time of their arrest. Maybe not at all. They were all charged, though, with homosexual conduct for living in an apartment that 2 men who were HIV positive lived in. Apparently, that was the entire basis of the charge. Now, police the Rights Watch people, have spoken to the 4 men since their arrest. They've told Human Rights Watch that a non-commissioned officer in the police station beat one of them on the head several times, and the police forced the men to stand in painful positions for hours with their arms lifted in the air. Sound familiar? They were provided with no food, no drink, no blankets. Sound familiar? During their days of detention. The authorities tested these men for HIV without their consent. One of the men reportedly said that the prosecutor, who the police gave free access to the men, the prosecutor informed the men that they had been tested for HIV and that they had tested positive, and then informed them that, and I quote, "People like you should be burnt alive. You do not deserve to live." Now, a Cairo court convicted these 4 men last month, January the 13th, under Article 9C of law, several digits, which criminalizes the, and I quote again, habitual practice of debauchery. Now, that is a term used to arrest and condemn consensual homosexuality or loving relationships, even casual ones in Egyptian law. All of these things are, of course, relationships, and even casual ones are allowed for the heterosexual people, but it's debauchery. According to the defense attorneys, the prosecution based their case only on coerced and forced evidence taken from the men, the statements which were signed under duress and force. Neither called witnesses or produced any evidence to counter the men's claim of guilt, or rather not guilt. There was nothing brought into court, so the attorneys apparently couldn't care less. And so the Cairo Appeals Court upheld their 1-year prison sentence, and they held them in a Cairo hospital chained to beds for, this is another extension of being chained to beds for 23 hours a day. This is proving, according to the human rights folks, that the Egyptian police are acting on the belief, which is not being challenged, that HIV is a crime and not a condition to be treated. HIV were forcibly tested. They were tested forcibly for HIV. There was no consent. The trials were driven by prejudice and the convictions without evidence of any of them. It violates international law. This is, of course, something you just don't expect. You expect Egypt to be more progressive and more open and enlightened than that, but we're certainly finding out that isn't the case for everyone. In fact, Egypt desperately tries to, I hesitate to use the word desperately, but certainly tries to encourage tourism After all, the pyramids and the Nile and the whole bit, that's something everyone learns about even in grade school. And so it's a well-traveled destination, but I don't think the LGBT community is very much welcome there. Of course, the practices of chaining people in hospitals and not providing them with any treatment for HIV is a serious health condition. Of course, they're urging Egypt to undertake training for all criminal justice officers, et cetera, et cetera. We've heard this so many times. Nothing works unless it's international embarrassment. It's similar to the situation, not as serious, but it reminds me of the situation in South Florida with the robo-toilet mayor who was beating up the LGBT community. It wasn't until Fort Lauderdale was embarrassed nationally by his behavior that things begin to change. Your moral code of conduct, your what's in your heart, how you feel about humanity, never seems to occur to these people. It's only embarrassment. And how can you be embarrassed by knowing that it was wrong all along? If you didn't think it was wrong, you wouldn't be embarrassed. So this Article 9C, several numbers, detains many people on the basis of their HIV status, and you are homosexual should you test positive or, in fact, live in an apartment formerly inhabited by someone with HIV. You go in down in Egypt. I wonder if that's in the rental contract. Difficult stuff. Great news, Pam Spalding. We quote Pam Spalding many times on this program. Pam Spalding is one of the leading bloggers for the LGBT community. Pam Spalding, along with a handful of others, for instance, the Blairco Project, are wonderful sources for this program. We appreciate both of them very much. The National Black Justice Coalition, who we had on the show just a few weeks ago, earlier this month, the National Black, wonderful interview, by the way. If you missed it, stop by the strictlyconfidentialradio.com site, and you'll see the NBJC interview. Delightful man. NBJC has profiled her for Black History Month, Pam Spalding. And, of course, Pam is the editor and publisher of Pam's House Blend, and it was also honored as the LGBT blog in 2005, the best LGBT blog 2005 and 2006. And it ranks in the top 50 of progressive political blogs. It averages 110,000 visitors a month. Now, it was launched in 2004, and it was just Pam's personal response to the anti-gay state of affairs and anti-LGBT state of affairs and the political landscape in this country. Now, Spalding has roots in both North Carolina and Tennessee and considers herself to have dual citizenship. You got to love somebody who says this. Dual citizenship as a Southerner and a Yankee. You got to love that. And she brings that perspective to her blog. She is very, very articulate, and I love her commentary. She really can cut to the heart of an issue. She's at Pam's House Blend. I don't have the web address in front of me. It's probably pamshouseblend.com, but in any case, Google Pam's House Blend. It'll bring it right up. So Pam is an important lesbian blogger in this country, and it's interesting because she's a lesbian, gay, she's a lesbian blogger in a pretty much blogging world that is overwhelmed by gay men, at least our little aspect of it. Most of the blogs are gay men. I can name you several. But Pam is the lesbian of the group, and she's fabulous. She is fabulous. I've contacted Pam a couple times to be on the show. We haven't been able to touch bases yet, but we've had Blairco, and I'd love to have Pam on too, but... Well, we've actually touched bases, but it's like ships passing in the night. We can't seem to quite fix a date down, but it would be great to have her join us as a lesbian blogger. And I wanted to tell you guys about that. Okay, where do we want to go from here? Oh, too depressing. Don't want to do that one. Here we go. papers rustling, sound effects, horses clopping across the country. You got to love this. It's a political scandal, imagine that. But this is in a parliament in London. Turns out, this sounds so American, doesn't it, that a politician in London, it was discovered that he had one son and the boyfriend of another son on the payroll. He's a Conservative Party member, as we know so well. This is typically how they operate. He's been censured and banned from the House for 10 days in order to repay taxpayers' money that he used for salary for one of his sons and the boyfriend of another. Tisk, tisk. Of course, it's... Oh, well, yeah, of course, yes. He was a huge gay basher, and he was... didn't like that kind of behavior. Yet it's in his own family. And as they say, apples don't fall too far from the tree. Well, of course, I have no proof of that. But and in Indiana, I remember our story regarding Sean and Tim. Sean and Tim were the couple we told, talked a long time about Sean and Tim the other evening. They're the couple, the only LGBT couple to be legally married in the state of Indiana. If you'll recall the story, Sean and Tim are two kind of computer kind of guys, kind of little geeky kind of guys, and they fell in love. And that's a good thing. And then Indiana, a judge in Indiana, overturned the, said it was unconstitutional to bar LGBT folks from marrying, and Sean and Tim went and got married immediately, like right now. And they barely made it out of the door before the fundies, in a huge uproar, marched to the Capitol building screaming, "Let us vote! Let us vote! One man, one woman! Let us vote! Let us vote!" It's brilliant, just brilliant in their stand against debauchery. And so the state said it has voted 39-9 to amend the Constitution to define marriage as an institution between one man and one woman. Now, you see what's interesting about this, or at least in my perspective, what's interesting is we're not talking about a demographic here. We're talking about two real live people who have done real live interviews, and people know them from seeing them on TV. This is Sean and Tim. These are the only two married people in Iowa who happen to be LGBT. Can you imagine to be only two? And the natives, you know, storming the castle with their pitchforks and their lanterns and their torches, are screaming, "One man, one woman, let us vote. Sean and Tim are monsters. They must die." So Sean and Tim have commented that, in effect, that it's almost funny to watch these people stumble over themselves trying to refer to Sean and Tim as a demographic or a tribe of bohemian sex addicts. And as LGBT folks, we are quite aware that we're always referred to as homosexual. No flowers in the yard, no I love yous, no long emails into the night. And so Sean and Tim are indeed the purpose of this bill. Trying to attach it to something regarding property. You know how they do these things. And of course, like in Florida, it was going to be voted on in Florida in November. I think I told you the story about the fundies getting enough signatures here in Florida to put it on the ballot in Florida, and that, in fact, all of the new signatures came from, imagine that, the church. Which church? The Baptist church. In any case, just telling you the truth. So, yeah, like Florida, Indiana law already contains a same-sex marriage law that says that you cannot be married if you're of the same gender. And so now they want to amend the Constitution to prevent activist judges from overturning the law. When you get desperate, you get desperate. You got to wonder what it's like to be in the head of some of these people with the city in flames around you and the queers getting married and in one of our states, and obtaining legal unions in many of our other states, and being able to legally marry in Spain and a long list of other countries, being able to serve openly in the military, in fact, even get married in your uniforms in other countries. You know, the world is just on fire as far as they're concerned. But amazingly enough, let's take the state of Massachusetts. The divorce rate didn't go up. I mean, you know, Fred's wife Sally didn't decide, well, gee, now I can marry a lesbian. Now I'm going to head right down to that big old lesbian biker bar, and I'm going to get me a big old lesbian with a big old motorcycle. Nope, it didn't happen. And Sally's wife, or Sally's husband, rather, didn't run down to the local discotheque because now he could have himself a man and snatch up one of them cute gay guys on the dance floor. Just didn't happen. Massachusetts remains with the lowest divorce rate in the country. It remains with the lowest abortion rate in the country. It remains the state with the lowest amount of college dropouts in the country. It is a state to be proud of. But the world's on fire, according to the, you know, I realize it's ignorance. And in, you know, in deference to our two guests, you know, love is the right thing to do, but no buts, just is. But I got to tell you about it, and that's my job, and I'm sticking to it. Oh, Lord, you know, Nancy Pelosi has come up again. Speaker of the House, Miss Nancy, impeachment is off the table, Pelosi. She has come up again regarding the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. I told you this story a while back, that Nancy Pelosi is refusing to turn over Foley's computers to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement because the Florida Department of Law Enforcement needs them to continue to investigate the case of Foley hitting on the House, the pages and what have you, and sending him dirty emails late in the night when he'd been drinking. He said it was alcohol that caused his homosexuality. Turns out he's a big old gay guy that lives, was it Arizona or was it California? And Palm Springs, I believe it was. Yes, Palm Springs. And he knows everybody, and everybody knows him. And his boyfriend, or longtime partner, is no less than a huge plastic surgeon to the stars. But while he's in Washington, he hits on the little boys. He's sick, Republican. I got to tell you. You know, if there's a hole in the ground deep enough to bury them all in, I'm all for it. And Bob is reminding me that of the time. Thank you, Bob. Yes, we should. We'll take a break from this stunning section of news, absolutely fabulous section of news with Strictly Confidential, and we're going to venture across to the gay bar across the street. And as I told you earlier, our dear friend Victor is playing tonight. Victor from Disco 935 in New York, the world's most fabulous world. Well, I have two. I have more than one world's most fabulous. Oh, yeah, yeah. And we may start calling it God's Little Gay Bar, by the way. That's been one of the most creative and, I think, personally hysterical suggestions so far for the gay bar across the street, for them, that God's Little Gay Bar. So we may call it that for a while if it sticks. We're going to head across the street to God's Little Gay Bar, and we're going to find our dear friend Victor in progress at the turntables, and I love the way he says, hello, roll it, Bob.
Oh, yeah, it's Disco 935's VJC. A little bit of high energy from back in the day. Dave Merlin, Electric Nights, the year was 1986. Enjoy the ride, the memories from back in the day. Hello, it's VJC. Martin talking. You're my heart, you're my soul. It's Disco 93.5 VJC. Enjoy the ride. We'll be right back. Bad Boys Blue Mega Mix. I'm BJC, live from New York. Enjoy the ride. Enjoy the memories from back in the day. Hello.
Shine bright.
Train to Nowhere. It's the 80s high energy mix done by yours truly, VJC, from Studio 935 New York. Catch me at www.disco935.net. That's where you can catch me on live365.com doing Disco 935, the rhythm and soul from New York. Till next time, it's VJC. And a big shout out to Peter for allowing me to do the Disco 935 20-minute mix on Strictly Confidential Radio. Until next time, it's the one and only BJC from New York. Bye-bye. See ya. I want to be ya. Hey, Peter. Good night.
Oh, you gotta love the Victor. Victor, I have to tell you, that is one of your very best sets yet. The chat room absolutely loved it. You just rocked the world. You really got it going on, kiddo. And you guys can hear this music, not just the 20 minutes every week or two as we rotate DJs, but Victor is available at disco935.net in New York 24 hours a day. And many times he is playing live. In fact, he absolutely loves playing live. So we appreciate him taking out some time to do the 20-minute gay bar across the street section, which we are now calling Godzilla Gay Bar. Bob pointed out to us that the LGBT folks with the kids, with two daddies, Daddy, Daddy, why is there lightning? And Daddy says, well, that's lightning coming from Godzilla Gay Bar in the sky. So many twisted people on this network. God, I am so fortunate to be here. I want to tell you that tomorrow evening is a guest that you really should not meet. I'm so sorry. Really should not miss is what I intended to say. It's Reverend Andrew J. Weaver, and you folks have heard me at length go on about the Mark of the Beast and how Bush has it tattooed on his posterior rear end, and that the Southern Methodist University, which is of course part of the Southern Methodist Church, is looking to have the Bush Library there, which will be the Seton of the Beast after he leaves the White House. And many thinking Methodists are in arms about this. Now, Reverend Andrew J. Weaver is the leading person who is coordinating all this. He's the person who got the original petition together. Andrew knows in great detail about IRD, the Institute on Religion and Democracy, which I try to explain many times, but the detail that we're going to receive from Andrew J. Weaver tomorrow evening, I think, will be astounding. I really, really do not want you to miss the interview with Andrew J. Weaver tomorrow evening. If you'll stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com, you'll see a link to him, his calendar date, and a link to sign the petition. Also, tomorrow night's Gay Bar Across the Street section is a new DJ. He's been on the show, but he's not one of our run one of the sections, and it's called, his name is D.C. LaRue, and I'm very much looking forward to that. I also have great news. During the break, I received confirmation from yet another DJ who is going to be joining us for Gay Bar Across the Street segments. His name is Hank Steinhauer. Now, Hank plays in Miami, and he is a delightful man, and has a wonderful story, and you're going to love his music. He is very dedicated, and I think you'll, in fact, I know you will. I'm delighted to have Hank Steinhauer from Miami join us, and we'll talk about that soon. We just got the confirmation tonight, and we'll work out the details soon. And next week we hope have D.C. LaRue, and then we'll have Larry Sanders back. We'll hopefully have Glenn Rivera back soon. We're working on everything. I had a brief story here from Cassie Freckles from her You Think Left blog. May not have time to do that and do it justice. I'd hate to have to rush through it. So may just go ahead and save that for tomorrow evening. And, that's probably the best thing to do. It's just a little too long to try to fit in tonight. Oh, yes, this evening, John Fox is still down this evening. I'm so sorry he is. I promised you last week that there would be myself and Bob Kincaid and John from Australia, all tied together at the studio in West Virginia, doing a horn section, which is a host. The hosts get together and talk about, we have no clue what we're going to talk about. And at the end of the night, it's God's little miracle as to how things are going. So having said that, we have I'm so glad to have you back. Bob will be back tomorrow evening. Things are going swimmingly. And then having said all that, oh, yes, Cynthia Manley's coming back, too. We're going to be having her back on the show, too. I haven't asked her yet, but I'm looking forward to. Here's Strictly Confidential featuring Miss Cynthia Manley, reminding you, too.
Down in Anstead and over east into the western part of Greenbrier County, whence we hear the blasting now on a daily.
This is the Quality News Network. With home prices falling and mortgage debts climbing, U.S. households lost a record $128 billion in real estate equity in the third quarter, ending November 30th. That's according to the Federal Reserve. Contrasting numbers for 2005 show homeowners' equity had risen by $1.2 trillion. That's at the height of the housing boom. A new White House plan to freeze subprime mortgage rates for the next 5 years introduced by President Bush today. More than 1 million American homeowners faced with